All right, I'd like to call this rulemaking public hearing to order. Good afternoon, my name is Jacqueline Matupi, and I want to make sure that the other locations can hear me, all right? Memphis, are you guys able to hear us? Memphis? Are we muted? Okay. Memphis, can you hear me now? Memphis?
Hey, Jacqueline, Memphis is on the force.
Okay, terrific. Johnson City, can you hear us?
Okay.
Mark? Chattanooga, can you hear us?
Yes, we can hear you.
Terrific. Knoxville, can you hear us?
Yes, we can hear you.
Terrific. And Johnson City, can you hear us?
Jacqueline, the last time I looked at it, Johnson City didn't have any folks there. So.
Okay. All right. All right, good afternoon. My name is Jacqueline Matupi. I'm with External Affairs for the Tennessee Department of Environment and Conservation. And at this time, I would like to advise everyone to please be aware that this hearing is being recorded live, also video conferencing from Memphis, Chattanooga, Knoxville, and Johnson City. If you could take a moment and please silence your phone, that would be appreciated. Also, if you have not registered, please do so and check the comment box if you wish to express comments regarding the rulemaking proposal, both here in Knoxville, here in Nashville, and then the other field offices. This hearing is being held at 1:30 p.m. Central Standard Time, June 13, 2017, in Conference Room A and C on the third floor of the Tennessee Tower, Nashville, Tennessee, by the Department of Environment and Conservation. This hearing is being held to consider the adoption of new rules in Chapter 0400-7001, Tennessee Historical Commission. Pursuant to Tennessee Code, annotated sections 4-11-401. At the Tennessee Heritage Protection Act, TCA, section 41412. This hearing will be conducted in a manner prescribed by the Uniform Administrative Procedures Act, TCA, section 4-5-404. Patrick McIntyre with Tennessee Historical Commission will now share details of the proposed rulemaking. Patrick?
Thank you, Jacqueline, and good afternoon, everybody. I'm Patrick McIntyre, Director of the Tennessee Historical Commission. With me this afternoon is Tim Heider, who's with our Tennessee Wars Commission. He's the Program Director, as well as Dan Brown, who is our Historic Sites Program Director with the Commission. I'll go right into this. Unless a waiver is granted by the Tennessee Historical Commission, the Tennessee Heritage Protection Act of 2016, which is codified at 4-1-412, prohibits any memorial regarding a historic conflict, historic entity, historic figure, or historic organization that is or is located on public property from being removed, renamed, relocated, altered, rededicated, or otherwise disturbed or altered. The law prescribes how petitions to the Tennessee Historical Commission must be processed. To evaluate petitions for a waiver under the Tennessee Heritage Protection Act of 2013, the Tennessee Historical Commission developed its considerations by policy. After a petition for declaratory order was filed by the City of Memphis regarding this policy, a determination was made by the Tennessee Historical Commission to adopt the waiver consideration criteria as a rule in Chapter 0400-70-1 to apply to petitions under both acts after public notice and comment. All comments received during the public comment period will be responded to in the public record, and multiple commenters making the same or similar comment will be summarized and responded to once. No extra weight will be given to repeated comments, and all the comments, whether written or verbal, will be treated the same. Please let me remind everybody that this is a rulemaking hearing to evaluate the waiver consideration criteria as proposed. It's not a hearing to evaluate a waiver that may be pending before the Tennessee Historical Commission. The purpose of this hearing is to receive public comments on the proposed rulemaking. The purpose of the rulemaking hearing today is to receive comments relative to the criteria If you do not wish to make verbal comments, you may place your written comments on the registration table at any time during the hearing. Notice of this hearing was filed with the Secretary of State on April 12, 2017, as required by the Uniform Administrative Procedures Act, Tennessee Code Annotated 4-5-203. The procedure for adoption of rules in Tennessee as it relates to the adoption of these rules consists of reviewing the comments received at this hearing, plus additional written comments received by 4:30 p.m. Central Daylight Time today at the close of business, June 13, 2017, which is the end of the comment period. These will then be evaluated, and based upon these comments, the proposal could be revised by incorporating such additional changes as deemed legal, necessary, and desirable by the Tennessee Historical Commission. If the Commission adopts these rules, they will go to the Department of Environment and Conservation's Office of General Counsel and then to the State Attorney General's Office to be reviewed for legality and constitutionality. If the AG's office approves them, they will then be filed with the Secretary of State's office and will become effective 90 days following such filing. During this 90-day period, they will also be presented to the Joint Legislative Government Operations Committee. The Secretary of State's office will place the final rules on their website in PDF format. Does anybody have any questions on the procedure that I just described? Again, I would like to request that anybody who did not register on your way in, please do so, and also check the comment box beside your name if you wish to present verbal comments. The procedure for receiving your comments will be as follows. Those of you who have marked on the registration sheet that you wish to comment will be called to speak. Each speaker will have 4 minutes for their comments. When you're called to speak, please state your name and your affiliation. We would appreciate having a written copy of your comments, if available. Again, if you have any that you wish entered into the hearing record but do not wish to speak, please give them directly to me immediately following the conclusion of this hearing. At this time, I'm going to read the proposed rules. The proposed rules are derived from the criteria initially presented at the Commission's October 2013 meeting in Chattanooga. These criteria were added on, voted on, and approved by the Tennessee Historical Commission at the October 2015 meeting in Jonesboro. The proposed rules are substantially the same as the criteria already adopted by the Tennessee Historical Commission. The prohibition relates to the listing, related to the listing on the National Register of Historic Places contained in the criteria, has been revised to reflect the changes made to Tennessee Code Annotated 4-1-412 by the Tennessee Heritage Protection Act of 2016. Chapter 0400-70-01, Tennessee Historical Commission, New Rule. When an entity petitions the Tennessee Historical Commission for a waiver relative to Tennessee Heritage Protection, the Tennessee Historical Commission shall evaluate the following considerations when rendering a decision. A. Whether the proposed change serves the public interest. B. Whether the proposed change has any commercial undertones. C. Whether the proposed change has a reasonable relationship to the site. D. Whether the proposed change has demonstrated support or opposition from local residents. E. If a change in name or rededication is proposed, whether the change is in conformance with the character of the existing names or dedications in the area. F. If a change in name or rededication is proposed, whether the change is duplicative of other nearby site names or dedications. G. Whether the proposed change is offensive or has derogatory or defamatory implications. H. Whether the proposed change detracts from or enhances the commemoration of the conflict, event, entity, figure, or organization previously commemorated. I. Whether the proposed change is expected to have a significant positive or negative economic impact. J. Whether the proposed change could cause confusion for visitors interested in the site. K. Whether the proposed change diminishes or enhances the historic integrity of the site. L. Whether the proposed change is relative to a historic site on the National Register of Historic Places or a National Historic Landmark. And M. If a relocation is proposed, whether the new location is appropriate. 2. The enumeration of the considerations in paragraph 1 of this rule does not prevent the Tennessee Historical Commission from taking into account other considerations. And so I thank you for your time, and then I'm going to turn this back over to Jacqueline for the actual comments. Thank you.
Thank you, Patrick. And also, I forgot to mention that we have a printed out version of the PowerPoint, and so everything that Patrick just went over, we do have it in PowerPoint, so you could follow along. We do have printed versions in the back of the room. So with that, we will begin the oral comment period, and we'll begin with comments in the field offices, starting with Chattanooga, and then Knoxville, Memphis, and Johnson City. So at this time, I'm going to start with Jennifer Innes. Jennifer, are you with us?
Yes, we have one person that would like to comment here.
Okay. Can you please have them state their name and affiliation, please?
Okay, yes, ma'am. My name is Herb DeLoach. I live here in Chattanooga, and I'm a member of the Sons of Confederate Veterans. And I'm a little bit confused. I also sent you all a written comment, but I wanted to expound on this just a little bit. And what really is concerning me about this, and I don't know if you want to answer this, or but I would like an answer either now or a written, please. Why can't we use what was adopted in October of 2015 as the criteria for the waiver? That's my main concern, mainly because if I read and compare what Mr. McIntyre has sent me as the proposed, which you guys just read, versus what the October 2015 statute says, and I assume that's what you're going by right now, what 2015 was agreed on, why you have to change it and make it a little more difficult in my estimation. In other words, your notice of rulemaking hearing 04-08-17 notice ID 2691 file date 4-13-17, which we're talking about, until they are compared word for word, they seem to be the same. But then as you get into it, if you set them side by side, you come to find out real quick that they're not the same. The 2015 rule is specific and exact, and there's no room for anything to be misconstrued on it. This on the act that you are now asking to be approved as the waiver procedure, to me has been muddied to the fact that it can be interpreted a lot. In 2015. Is very, very clear. And two examples that I want to give is number 11 on the 2015 rules. It says the proposed change should not diminish the historic integrity of the property. Okay? Now, what you guys want to put there is whether the proposed change diminishes or enhances the historic integrity of the site. Now, that's the same, but it ain't the same. The next thing I want to talk about is number 12, a historic site on the National Register of Historic Places is not subject to a waiver. Okay, if you go over now to what you guys want to put in there, whether the proposed change is relevant to a historic site on the National Historic Places or a National Historic Landmark. Relevant? Somebody went to a whole lot of trouble to get the park or the statue or whatever it is covered by the National Historic Register, covered under the National Historic Register. So why would you consider it possibly relevant or not relevant? Why have the National Historic Monument protection? That's basically where I am. I do not understand that, and I would like for somebody to hit me out with that, whether right now or later on is fine. But basically, those are only two examples I've given you. But you can set these side by side, the 2015 that you guys are using right now, plus what you want to use, what you're wanting to adopt, And you can see there's a lot of things that it's similar, but it is not the same. And so I want to know why you want to change it. That's my point of view. And that's all I have to say. I thank you for the opportunity to express my concerns.
Terrific, and thank you. And we will not be providing responses today. We're just collecting comments.
Okay, thank you, ma'am.
Jennifer, do you have anybody else that would like to present in Chattanooga or comment?
No, that was all.
Okay. So next we'll go to Knoxville. And we have Audrey Jeffs.
Well, I do have two speakers. The first speaker is Rod O'Barr.
Okay.
O'Barr, if you would say your name and your town that you're from. My name is Rod O'Barr, and I come as a concerned citizen from the Strawberry Plains, Tennessee. And I appreciate the time to speak. And to the members of the commission, I see a clear intent in the law to favor preservation of historical memorials. Section 2B8A of the Tennessee Heritage Protection Act of 2016 says, if a memorial is designated as a national landmark or listed on the National Register of Historic Places, there shall be a presumption in favor of preservation of the memorial. The new rule, this being considered today, appears a deliberate attempt to weaken that intent. The list of rules adopted October 2015 stated a clear prohibition against waiver if the memorial was a national landmark or listed on the National Register of Historic Places. Section 1L in the new rule removes that prohibition. My question is this done in favor of preservation, or is there some other motive? As a concerned citizen, I would request that any consideration of waiver, particularly as it relates to Civil War memorials, be guided by a keen awareness that our present culture is highly charged with conflicting ideologies. The danger is a current ideology can transform history into propaganda for a cause. The historiological fallacy of presentism is judging the past in terms of current ideals and values. And as Dr. Ludwell Johnson, Professor of History Emeritus at the College of William and Mary, as so aptly pointed out, quote, it is a short step from viewing the past in terms of the present to using a contrived image of the past to coerce the present. Thus, there is no essential difference between history, fiction, and myth. If you think this kind of cognitive suicide could not possibly attract a following, you should leave the rational world and visit the groves of Academy, end quote. The danger of this cognitive suicide is the possibility that it spawned a politically correct false narrative of the Civil War as it relates to our Southern heritage. For example, there is an abundance of nationally and internationally recognized scholars of Civil War history who would challenge the notion that the war was a moral conflict over slavery. They point out that historical truth is being suppressed or altered to advance an agenda. What if they're right? Are we to tear down memorials that have stood for over 100 years because of an agenda? Where does this end? Dr. Ludwell states, quote, of all fields of scholarship, history is perhaps most attractive and vulnerable to political correctness, to those who want to shape the future by inventing the past. Readers with a special interest in the period of Civil War need to be particularly alert because the South and Southerners offer many tempting targets. Let me repeat that. Readers with a special interest in the period of the Civil War need to be particularly alert because the South and Southerners often offer many tempting targets. My request as a concerned citizen of the South is that you peruse and be continually cognizant of the vast credible scholarship that calls into question what could be a politically correct version of the war and its memorials. There's credible evidence that interpretation of the war is not supported by the facts and is mere propaganda in support of a cause that could, at its roots, be anti-American. The facts of history should be your guide. If those facts are a matter of debate among solid historical scholarship, you shouldn't take waiver action to favor one side or the other. but instead vote, as the law states, in favor of preservation of the memorial. I appreciate your time allowing me to speak.
Thank you. And if you have your comment written down, please provide that to your TDEC facilitator. We'd greatly appreciate that.
Great. Jacqueline, I have one more speaker, Scott Hall.
Great.
Mr. Hall, you state your name. My name is Scott Hall. I live in Seymour, Tennessee, and I speak and come before this committee as a concerned Tennessee resident. I speak in favor of maintaining the current rules. The new rules seem to decrease the protection which was to be afforded by our Tennessee Historic Preservation Act. In particular, and based on prior comments, I'll condense my comments to a particular rule proposal, and that is proposal subpart D, which references and addresses something to the effect of support of local residences. And I assume that that is associated with a particular location where a particular monument or historical item might be located. Of course, we as residents of Tennessee are concerned about all of Tennessee history, as I hope the commission is, and I know they are. And we don't want to change the history. History is based on fact. It's based on what actually took place and not what someone may want to try to suggest that it otherwise was. The section, subpart D, with regard to taking into account local residences or residents of the area, would cause the potential change in the monument location or items affecting the monument, the verbiage associated with the monument, based on who might move into a particular area or a particular city or town, based on who lives in that particular town, and not necessarily what the history truly is. The history doesn't change based on who might live in a particular area. History doesn't change based on who lives in the state of Tennessee. And we're talking about a greater history, and that's United States history as well. And if someone in Maine wants to visit Knoxville, I hope that they would come and look for true history, the truth about what happened and what took place, and not a codified version of history because they happened to come to Knoxville and a particular group in Knoxville or Chattanooga or Jacksboro or wherever they may go decided that they didn't or did not like or did or did not like a particular facet of history. Tennessee history is the issue that's before us, and I would suggest and request that the current rules remain as stated. It's probably significant that we are meeting here, and this commission consideration of the new rules is here at the Department of Environmental Conservation. We want to conserve history. That's the purpose of this agency within the state of Tennessee government, and we appreciate the Tennessee Historical Commission's efforts to ensure that the true history is preserved for future generations. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hall.
Jacqueline, that's all I have time.
Terrific, thank you. All right, next we have Memphis. Renee Atkins will be facilitating the field office in Memphis.
Okay, all right, thank you, Jacqueline. And we have about 8 speakers for Memphis so far. I'll call up first John Spain. And John, wherever you are, okay, can someone pass the microphone?
Thank you. Everybody hear me okay? Or is it still muted?
Nope, we can hear you here in Nashville.
Oh, you got me now? All right. My name is John Spain. I'm from Port Ova, Tennessee. I'm a member of the Sons of Confederate Veterans. I'm also on the board of directors of the Historic South here in Memphis. I come as a concerned citizen because my belief is that the rulemaking process for THC should make it harder for a waiver to be granted, not easier. We owe it to our children, to our future generations, to present history in a format that will provoke thought and not water it down or hide it away. Okay. The one thing, as far as the rulemaking process, the original rules are the ones that I support the most strongly. The proposed rules would be acceptable. The one that gives me pause is one that states whether the proposed change is offensive or has derogatory, defamatory implications. Who decides what's offensive? What's offensive to me may not be offensive to others. What's offensive to them may not be offensive to me. History doesn't care if you're offended. History is history. It should be presented in all its glory, warts and all. You know, history doesn't care. And that's my main thing on this. The other mileage will vary, but don't make it easier to write a waiver just to, as the gentleman said before, just to appease a personal political agenda. Make it harder. Let the history be there for the next generations to discuss. Let it provoke thought. And that's all I've got for you. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Spain.
Next we have Dorian.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm not a public speaker, but I'm going to speak from the heart. I'm a concerned citizen. I live in South Haven, Mississippi. And I'm here to support all history. The monument, if we start taking them away, where's it going to stop? A lot of people don't agree with the Vietnam War, but does that mean that we should dismantle all those monuments too? I think where we're missing the boat is that we're trying to invoke first century value on an 18th century problem. And we can't seem to get over that hurdle. I just appreciate, you know, the fact that we have a historical commission that is looking out, you know, for all the monuments. And I hope that you will do the job that you said you were going to do and protect the monuments. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Ms. Dory.
Next, Mr. Douglas Cummings.
Thank you. My name is Doug Couples. I'm from Bartlett, Tennessee. What I wish to address more than anything is the process here. It is my understanding that we're here today considering rules or revisions of rules because the Waiver Act criteria of October 2015 I was never addressed on the merits, but it's my understanding that it did not meet the Sunshine Law requirement. They were adopted and did not have an open hearing, so we're having an open hearing there. I'm also concerned a couple other reasons that we're told we're not going to get any answers today. Yesterday, those of the commission, I'm a member of the commission, received a large number of pages. And some of us didn't with this. We're going to be asked to make some decisions on it Friday. In about a three-hour period, we have all the work to do, and we have to basically be up to date on the merits of these requests, and we don't know what rules we're going to be working with. I'd like to share the thought. I don't see why, and if I need to read them into the record, I'll do so. We cannot consider the rules of October 2015. Make sure they meet the Senate that requirement. So let me ask now, do I need to do that, or may I just say that these rules of 2015 October be accepted as being considered and meet the requirements of the Sunshine Law? Can you answer that for me? National?
No, not at this time. We're just accepting oral comments.
That is a comment.
Well, I'm sorry. We're not providing responses.
Well, all I want to know, I'm not asking you to respond to it, will this be considered as meeting the requirements of the Sunshine Law? If I just say that I'd like to enter the amendment, or do I need to read them? The other thing I'd like to know is who's the author of these.
No.
I'm a member of the Tennessee History Commission. I had nothing to do with making these. They're supposed to be our rules for a waiver.
Are they going to be in effect Friday when we show up?
Mr. Cole.
I'm asking for comments. I'm asking for process and procedures. What were the applications here?
Yeah, Mr. Couples, at this time, we're not providing those responses. We're just simply accepting oral comments. So at this...
We're going to get them Friday morning when we show up over coffee and donuts?
So at this time, I won't be able to comment.
Well, ask Patrick. When am I going to get them? Patrick?
Excuse me.
All right, I'll bring you in there.
Excuse me, guys. This is Darren Foster, AV technician for the state. I believe the public was in the wrong room. I've gathered them all in room E, and we'd like to do a quick little test to make sure that you can hear them and they can hear you.
He did good.
Actually, there's a Macintosh in there. Is there a Macintosh presenting?
McIntyre, Patrick, is the director of the Tennessee History Commission.
Yes, sir. Okay. Yes.
He started this meeting up. I'd be happy to read these. That would be the sunshine law requirement.
Mr. Couples, if I can address you directly, at this time we are just taking comments, and I outlined the procedure. There's not any decisions being made for waivers at your Friday regularly scheduled commission meeting. There is an initial hearing, which is just to consider the parties involved. So I can discuss further with you, but as we talked about earlier, this is just the one step of many. This is a public hearing phase to adopt these rules to promulgate those. So.
Well,
I hope that answers.
About the process to adopt these. That's my question. I want to make sure that we are within the criteria of the Sunshine Law, and if I need to read these in here for consideration, happy to do it.
Well, they were adopted. The criteria that we're referencing that this is derived from were adopted at a public meeting. So, yes, the Sunshine Law was not the issue. The issue was promulgating these according to the Uniform Administrative Procedures Act. So that's why this process is happening now. This is one step for that.
But I need to have some questions answered. Are these original criteria, October 2015, are they properly being reviewed at this moment? That's all I need to know.
Yes. That's what this process is.
Well, like I said, we've been dumped on a whole lot yesterday. It's got a lot coming up. So you'll have to excuse me. I just need some questions answered. So my understanding is that the... criteria is October 2015 are now in the light of the sun. So, yes or no?
They have always been in the light of sun. That's how they were adopted originally, and this is the Uniform Administrative Procedures Act process to have them promulgated as rules.
Well, now there's a difference here. Are they being considered now? They are different.
This is one phase of that. This is a public hearing just to accept comments. This is not a consideration by the commission.
We have input on Friday.
That's not for this, for the next meeting, no sir. They have to go back and go through the process outlined at the beginning of this meeting, and then you all will have an opportunity to then adopt this.
Who's the author of these?
Who is the author? The commission came up with those, and then that's...
Not this new set, sir. No, sir.
Well, they're derived from the rules, so I would have to defer to our legal folks as to who maybe wants to take authorship.
Would you tell me that I'd like a written response to my questions, please?
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. I would like to remind everyone about the time limit here. Next, we will have Mr. Mark Buchanan. Mr. Buchanan.
Good afternoon. My name is Mark Buchanan. I'm from the great state of Tennessee, the wonderful city of Shakerag, Tennessee. The citizens of the state of Tennessee would like to appreciate the Tennessee Historical Commission for their dedication preserving and promoting Tennessee history. We've got some members in here, and I'd like to thank them. There have been recent events across the country pertaining to historical monuments that can affect people's decisions. And Tennessee has an opportunity to show how reasonable people can preserve and protect our history without the pressures of a word we heard earlier called presentism, where we view the past in the prism of the present. And when this occurs, information and context can be distorted. And it's our responsibility as citizens of the state of Tennessee and the United States to grant our future generations to view our history through clear and accurate presentation. The Tennessee Heritage Protection Act has addressed pertinent issues concerning the waiver process. And the original rules of October 2015, they're sufficient and should not be changed. The new rules are different. They're not the ones that were adopted in October 2015. So any rules and criteria that weaken the Act are not in the best interest of all Tennesseans in the history of the state of Tennessee and the United States. An alteration or removal of historic icons is counter to the reasons they were located where they are. The history, even the history behind the installation, dedication, and preservation, is a historical story in and of itself. What statues and monuments, streets, what have you, left in their historical context, they can better educate and improve community cohesiveness. They literally create a museum where they are in the communities. And the fact that so many people are concerned here and all across the state of Tennessee, it's an indication that our history is important to us. It's important to the commission, it's important to the public, and it's important to the United States of America. And we have a responsibility to our tourists and visitors to the state of Tennessee and the children of Tennessee to provide an educational experience that is true to the great and glorious history and story that is Tennessee. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Buchanan.
Okay, next we have Mr. Lee Miller.
My name is Lee Miller. From Memphis, speak as a concerned citizen. The Tennessee legislature passed this Heritage Protection Act to preserve the history of Tennessee, particularly the veterans, the military significance of heroes of Tennessee, the residences, the military men of Tennessee history. And the Tennessee Historical Commission is tasked with furthering the promotion, education, and enhancement of Tennessee history, particularly the preservation of Tennessee history. I support the original criteria as passed unanimously by the Tennessee Historical Commission and approved subsequently in further meetings, but passed unanimously in the October 2015 meeting in Jonesboro, Tennessee. The original criteria is strong. Its intent is to preserve Tennessee history, and I think that's what we're all here for. And what the legislature and the commission want is to preserve Tennessee history. The only exception, perhaps, is with item L, so as not to conflict with state law, I would suggest that item L, 1L, state as follows, whether the proposed change is relative to a historic site on the National Register of Historic Places or National Historic Landmark, but the presumption as stated in the statute still applies, which means the presumption is for preservation, particularly if the site is so significant as to be on the National Register of Historic Places or the Historic National Landmark. So that should be much more strongly considered considering a waiver so it is not easier to get a waiver if there is something that is so significant to Tennessee and American history. It should be preserved. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Miller.
Okay, next we have Ms. Joanne Moore.
My name is Joanne Cullen Moore, and I'm a resident of Corona in Tipton County, Tennessee. And I'm also a commissioner on the Tennessee Historical Commission. And these criteria that are in front of us now are not the ones that the commission actually voted on in Jonesboro, Tennessee in October of 2015. They have been revised, and I've been told that one in particular did not conform to state law, and that's why it's been changed. But nevertheless, the commission did not vote on this revision. And I I would like to also make it a point that we're not only the Tennessee Historical Commission, we are the State Preservation Office, which means that we are in charge of preserving things. And that's what these criteria are, should be geared towards, is towards preservation and not towards the destruction of history or revision of history. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Moore.
Next, we have Ms. Benton.
Muska.
Thank you.
Becky Muska, Olive Hill, Tennessee. The gentleman in Knoxville and in Chattanooga said everything that I was going to say. The only comment I can add is that there's a big difference between the words should and the word whether. The criteria that was adopted in October 2015, each of it says the proposed change should. And the new waiver, A through M, author unknown, says whether. Mm-hmm. And there's a big difference between the meaning of those two words. And I believe the Tennessee Historical Commission should be charged with not having to coddle public entities in the state of Tennessee to help them get waivers, but directly the opposite. They should be charged with making sure that our history in Tennessee is protected. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Muska.
Thank you. I have one final person, unless we have additional speakers. Okay. So we have a couple more, Jack.
Okay.
Mr. Walter Bailey is next.
Thank you. Let me first express my gratitude for having the opportunity to appear before you. I deem it quite a privilege and opportunity. And my appearance here, let me first tell you, I am a practicing lawyer, and all my professional career, I have fought and advocated for the liberty and freedom of mankind, black, white, didn't make any difference. And the underdog, the underprivileged. And one of the things that concerns me about, I've always been in this, and let me just also back up and say that years ago, there was a march in Memphis to rename the park and to remove the monuments, those statues. And that march and that effort, it was, it stemmed from the recognition by people who looked like me, African Americans, and white people who saw how to share with us that those monuments are offensive to black folks. They dredge up the worst part of our history. To us, those monuments represent slavery. They represent inequality. They represent segregation. They represent terror. And that's why we are offended. It cuts to the core with us. We're not just, we don't just theorize in terms of being opposed to it. We're opposed to it from the core, from a deep inner feeling of what those monuments do to us in terms of how we respond. Unfortunately, you know, the city of Memphis, I want to say, took the initiative and went ahead and representing the express will, represented as a government, as an entity, decided to go ahead and change those monuments, understanding the feeling, understanding the attitudes of the people in Memphis, understanding that 60% of Memphis is African American. So the city had was very sensitive to that in making every effort to remove what were offensive parts of our history. and I might say a distorted part, because the history that we see in terms of the Forest Monument is not the real Forest history. The real Forest history, if you want to depict that, he would be draped in a Klansman robe. That's who the real Forest is, and we know that. The real Forest is a man on a horse with a Klansman uniform, terrorizing, lynching.
You have some proof of that?
No. Thank you. Terrorizing. And that's why we so fervently want to see changes made. And it seems to me you would defer to the city. You would defer to what the council that represents the city of Memphis wants in this regard. It seems to me there will be no opposition to that. But you know, one of the things that I'm very much aware of, and that's attitudes. Attitudes are the hardest things to change. That's what perpetuated segregation so long, is the attitude. And I dare say, if the Civil Rights Bill had been put out there for vote among those who adore and analyze Forest statutes, those figures would have voted no against the Civil Rights Bill as well, because those are the same attitudes. Same attitudes. Attitudes are hard to change, coming from behavior and a culture that's hard to change. And you don't see any millennials out there pushing to perpetuate these statutes. You see people who have been living in the fantasy world of a distorted image, false image of Forrest and what he stands for. So in closing, I appreciate your indulgence. I hope I haven't offended anybody. That's what I'm trying to tell you. Come on. But I hope you take a hard look at what the city council leaders and the mayor, who represent the people of Memphis where that statute exists, where 60% of that population is black, they're saying, let's have progress. Let's put Memphis in a progressive view of the world. And let's tell the world that Memphis, like New Orleans did, that Memphis is no longer fantasizing with the past, that this is a new world we live in, that Memphis is progressive, and we're going to help Memphis to progress. We're going to help promote a positive image of Memphis. Instead of communicating to the world that Memphis is still living in the past, or that the South is still clinching to the past, hanging on to outmoded attitudes, horrible attitudes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bailey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you to the members who are here. I'm also a member of the Commission of the State of Tennessee, and I echo Mr. Couples in the sense that this would be great information for us to have by Friday, but since we won't have it, we'll move as outlined. I come, first of all, to speak against the proposed rules in the sense that those proposed rules do not take into consideration many things. I believe that when we know better, we must be given the opportunity to do better. I also believe that if we come with an understanding of the past, of all things, where there's an opportunity to correct the things that have been misunderstood or been presented in a nefarious way, we should take that opportunity. I believe that the current leadership of the city, the county, Memphis, and all cities around Tennessee should be given an eased opportunity to govern as appropriate for the place that they reside in according to the climate of that particular place. I further agree that these guidelines do not take into consideration that the said memorial provides a distorted and highly contestable, unfair point of view that breeds division. Whether or not it was originally erected or designated for a nefarious purpose, or whether current scholarship and social standards deem that it stands for and what it stands for is appropriate for publicly, universally supported tax dollars in public places. I believe that we should honor history, but not at the expense of citizens.
I believe that we should honor history, but not at my expense, not at the expense of future generations, and especially not at the dignity of African Americans and others who occupy the community in which we live. Municipalities should be given greater autonomy. Two mayors in the city of Memphis over the past 5 years have made an effort to govern in their area. I support them both in this effort to take these monuments down, and that the state must give ease of opportunity for waivers to be granted so that these mayors and the councils by which they serve with and the people whom they serve, their opinions can be expressed as well. I believe that you quoted earlier that it is like a living museum to see these things of history, and I agree. I should not be forced to live in a museum that does not honor me, that causes me to live in pain, that is vile in any way, and that dishonors the truth about history. You recognize that many parts of these monuments' history are being intentionally left out in order to glorify the word history. We're not trying to be revisionist, but we're saying an accurate portrayal of the real history of the monuments would cause reasonable people to say, dismantle these monuments. Tennessee has a great opportunity. I agree that we must work hand in hand to take down these monuments from public places. If you wish to place them in private areas in which you deem necessary, no one would argue with you on those things. However, they should be removed from our public parks. They should not be a part of the history to make us live in a nightmare on Elm Street. That would be the appropriate title of the museum.
Thank you.
Yes, Mr. Allen Wade.
Yeah, I'm Allen Wade. I represent the city of Memphis, and I think we have filed a written comment. I know you're not going to respond, but the issue is, are you going to post all of the written comments that you have received, or how is that going to be handled? My question was, are you going to post the listing of the written comments that you've had to the rulemaking process so people will know that they have appropriately commented?
Yes, we are.
Thank you.
Yes,
sir. I'm a late arriver. I didn't sign in to speak, but in reading the material, I knew it was correct. Yes, sir. My name is Don Blair. I live in Fisherville, Tennessee.
People tell me I don't really need a microphone. I shout so much.
My name is Don Ware. I live in Fisherville, Tennessee. In reading the material on room making process, item M says, if a relocation is proposed, whether the new location is appropriate. My question is, who would decide the propriety of a location? Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Ware.
At this point, unless anyone thinks, I think we are complete with comments from Memphis.
Terrific, thank you. Next, we'll go to Johnson City. Mark?
Yeah, I have one speaker who would like to speak. His name is Joe Potter.
Okay.
Mr. Potter, would you state your name and where you're from?
We'll play the Can You Hear Me?
Yes, we can.
Yes, we can.
Thank you. My name is Joe Potter. I am a resident of the state of Tennessee. I guess I'm most easily identified as being a member of the SCV. I am also a veteran of the 2nd Recon Battalion, U.S. Marine Corps. I want to thank TDEC for providing the site and so on today. I actually was going to bring two veterans who are unable to travel very far, but actually one of them had to go back to the doctor today. So again, thank you guys very much for facilitating this for us. My comments, I have condensed them regarding the rules, the
previous comments, I believe they came out of Knoxville regarding Section 2B8A of the Tennessee Heritage Protection Act of 2016 lends to preserve existing memorials. Incomplete, the rules that as they are proposed, we feel that they kind of go against that. Regarding that also, items B, D, G, H, and I, which concern commercial enterprises and commercial effects, communities, the commission itself receives its power and so on to grant these waivers under the powers of the Tennessee Heritage Protection Act. But the Tennessee Heritage Protection Act does not grant purview to commercial enterprise or anything else. So we're wondering what the legal standing is to even use these rules. If these rules, in whole or in part, are adopted by the commission, we have objection to the fact that they are enumerated and appear to be equal in weight and so on and so forth, not being weighted in some type of a application process noting what the commission would consider as equal or having more of an effect on the possibility of granting such a waiver. So again, thank you for your time. And
thank you, Mr. Potter. Mark, do you have any other speakers?
Any other speakers in Knoxville or Johnson City? Once, twice. Thank you.
Thank you, Mark.
Jacqueline, we do not.
Terrific. Thank you. So in Nashville, we have one speaker, Elizabeth Coker.
Jacqueline, can you hear me?
Yes.
We also have three people signed up to speak. If you all your E.
Terrific. Do you want to facilitate that after Elizabeth speaks?
Yeah, okay. Sure, that's
okay.
That
terrific. Okay. Elizabeth?
Good afternoon. My name is Elizabeth Coker. I'm from the state of Tennessee in the Middle District and live in the area of Rutherford County known as Rockvale and Eagleville. I'm very pleased to see all the Tennessee Historical Commissioners, the Executive Director, Patrick McIntyre, and all of our representatives here today, Ms. Representative Butt, Representative McDaniels. Thank you for coming today. My comments will come in the form of a couple of questions. I have seven that I'd like to address in regard to protocol on accepting waiver applications. Number one, and this has been in some instances in Knoxville as well as in Johnson City, been in Memphis, been touched upon, but I will go ahead anyway. Number one, why was the waiver application from the City of Memphis allowed to be placed on the agenda at Gatlinburg meeting in October 2016, when it now appears that that was premature in finalizing the process of accepting the current criteria? Seems to me that, as Mrs. Joanne Moore in Memphis has pointed out, the previously adopted criteria does not match the proposed criteria, and there are some legal techno-speak words that have changed possibly the meaning. And it's the biggest question I have is why did it take a year from 2015 to 2016 for this promulgation to take place? Why also is the waiver application from the Middle Tennessee State University on the agenda for the upcoming meeting Friday, June 16th at Pickwick for the same reason? When the criteria has not been finalized and it's stated in the email to participants that no debate, there was one email that I received, no debate and no vote would take place today on the criteria, and this would not be in time for their Pickwick meeting. I understand you consider this a preliminary application process, but it seems to me we're getting the cart before the horse, as we do many times in state government sometimes. Why were the rules number three submitted for submitted comments to this hearing changed and posted in the form of a PDF at the last minute on Thursday, June 8th, when you have had this hearing scheduled since April? Dr. Couples spoke to the confusion of the issues as a commissioner, and I'm afraid to say that this has really been the thrust of what has been going on. Even commissioners have not received, not all commissioners have received the same information. I know of one in particular who did not receive the packet on the Forest statue, on the Forest Hall information, and we have that meeting on Friday. It seems to me that receiving large packets of information on waiver applications before the criteria is settled, isn't that going to jeopardize the criteria rulemaking process and further prematurely present information on waiver applications? It's definitely the cart before the horse. It seems that the confusion, obviously, the executive director of the commission has not been forthcoming with these rules for this hearing and has previously given some special preferential treatment to the city of Memphis by offering a teleconference site only to that city when this is clearly intended to be a statewide issue appealing to all regions of the state, and yet other cities were not even aware of this hearing due to lack of proper notice. And I point to the insistence of Knoxville and Chattanooga and Johnson City in having these sites. In previous, in subsequent hearings, I hope that we will not make that same mistake. According to Fisher, Fisher versus Rutherford County 2010, Judge Robert Corlew determined in that opinion rendered in his chancery courtroom that postings on websites do not qualify for public notice. That a notice has to be placed in an area newspaper of general circulation, and the Attorney General refuses to allow, but only certain already predetermined newspapers to fall under that category. Newspapers merge, they go out of business, other new publications come into business, and yet our Attorney General will not say how this information is to get to the public domain. If other newspapers have requested and qualify for such designation, yet the AG still remains silent. And as I understand, the AG is going to have the last word on some of this criteria. We do not seem to have a good means of effectively communicating issues of importance like this with the public in regard to historical preservation from this commission. Number four, what do you propose would be a better solution and would meet the same type of legal challenges that you have indicated this commission is trying to avoid by properly carrying out the protocol of promulgating rules? Number five, why, specifically, has the approved criteria been reworded regarding the status of a site on National Historic Register been changed? Number six, how would the lack of public hearings by the Tennessee Board of Regents affect the upcoming waiver application for Middle Tennessee State University when the criteria for rules for their consideration was never promulgated as far as we know? They did not have public hearings either. Tennessee State Board of Regents passed that information on when Sidney McPhee went to them. There were no public hearings held. I think that's going to put a monkey wrench in Friday's presentation. The rewording of criteria that was already approved was to promulgate the rules, yet it does not seem that this information has been clearly presented to the commissioners nor to the public when not all have been notified by the same information and your website has not been updated to reflect the same information sent out to those who have inquired. And finally, number seven. Would it be possible to create an action list of emails for those who wish to receive information directly as it becomes available, since this would be a way to inform as many parties as possible of the issue, in this issue as possible? I support the wording of the rules as passed in Jonesboro 2015 and further ask, why did it take 1 year, from 2015 to 2016, for this process to be challenged? Especially if, as Mr. McIntyre states, that the previously adopted rules were accepted legally and passed the muster of Sunshine Law. You just spoke to that. Who was it? Who is it that claims status for National Historic Register should be challenged as illegal? Those are my questions. I have one other thing. I have a newspaper from Montreat, North Carolina, a monument dedicated to a World War II veteran. He had four Purple Hearts, four Bronze Stars, four Bronze Medals. And the question that I have is, this is a World War II monument. If we have in our current situation thousands of immigrants that are taking over Europe, Muslim immigrants going to Germany, what's to say that we might not in the next 10 to 20 years have a large immigration of German immigrants to this country who will also oppose our World War II monuments? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Coker. Brooke, I'm going to turn it over to you.
Okay, thank you very much. I'm going to call out the names in the order that they're on the list here, and when you speak, you don't have to get up. The microphone will pick you up. Just state your name and what affiliation that you are with. And the first person I have is J.C. Knott. Am I saying that right?
Yes, my name is J.C. Knott. I'm a citizen of the great state of Tennessee. I live in the town of Pleasant Shade. I'm also a proud member of the Sons of Confederate Veterans Camp number 2285, located out of Gordonsville, Tennessee. I'd like to thank TDAC for having this hearing. That way we could voice our opinions on these things. Hopefully we can get some things hashed out and more clear. The thing that concerns me about Confederate monuments that are under attack, whether it's in New Orleans or in Tennessee, and it's a good thing that Tennessee has passed a law, Alabama and Virginia following suit. All of this is due to the Antiquities Act of 1906 that was repealed by Trump just a little while back. That put this power back into the states to protect what is states' rights. But the thing of it is, today it's Confederate monuments. Tomorrow it's the rest of the monuments in this country. And we're already seeing these things. They're organizing against Sam Houston. They defaced the Joan of Arc statue in New Orleans. They're wanting Andrew Jackson pulled down. So these statues, whether you like them or not, both good or bad, are what diversified this nation and made it to be the great nation that it has become, a superpower in the world. And it's a shame to see that our heritage cannot be passed on, whether you like it or not, to the young to understand. What's the practice of live and let live policy in this country, except nowadays everything offends everybody. I don't care if it's your Christian values or what it is. So if we don't allow these monuments to stand, then there's no stopping to where this is going to go. We're under a communist progressive attack that began in the 1960s, and these people are in all the right places. They're indoctrinating our children into thinking of a progressive way of destroying what we've held dear. So I think we really need to reconsider why we're attacking this and why we don't need to, and that we need to keep these statues. And those of you that do not know, that are misinformed, that issue, slavery, was one of the issues. The real battle was over states' rights. And what broke the straw that broke the camel's back was a 29% increase in tariff overnight that the federal government put on the back of the South to carry. And there was a lot of things that led up to that. I challenge you to look up the Corwin Amendment and see where this goes. I challenge you to look how the slaves were treated even after the Emancipation Proclamation. You do not know your history. So, thank you for your time.
Okay. Next on the list is Mark Hudson.
My name is Mark Hudson. I'm from Red Morning Springs, Tennessee, in Macon County, Tennessee. I'm an eighth generation Tennessean. Our family's history goes all the way back to the original settlers as they came from North Carolina on Revolutionary War Kings. As far as the proposed rules here, I'm in agreement with Mr. Buchanan, Mr. Miller, and those that and the lady from the Tennessee Historical Commission, that these rules need to follow the original intent of the law. That, as it was written in 2016, signed into effect by Governor Haslam. What's so important about these monuments, regardless of what one's individual interpretation of them may be, is that those who forget history are doomed to repeat it.
we've already forgotten a great deal of our history and hard facts. And to the gentlemen who are from Memphis and given our Confederate heritage such a hard way to go, I would direct them to a couple of sources here that I think would be beneficial for them to review. One would be the report of the Joint Select Committee appointed to inquire in the condition of affairs in the late insurrectionary states. Now, what this document is, it's a 13-volume, 7,000-page document that was conducted by the United States Congress to investigate what they termed, even in 1869, to be the terroristic acts of the Ku Klux Klan. That was in each state that formerly had been in rebellion. Well, it did document those activities, but it also documented the activities of organizations known as the Indian Leagues. It also documented riots and town burnings by former slaves who were roving in bands and acting out their anguish and destruction. None of these, for every action, there is an equal and opposite reaction. And we here in the South, particularly of Confederate heritage, we're suffering a one-sided tragedy of history. Now, Nathan Bedford Forrest played a very important part in bringing that sad chapter to an end. And that's the point that we would like to work with those of the black community in bringing forward. There was a monumental, and Ben, say you're in Memphis, I would direct you to this newspaper. It'd be the Memphis Daily Appeal, July the 6th, 1875. And you need to begin reading at an article titled, The Fourth. What this was the black African-American 4th of July celebration that they had been planning all year long. And they had resolved themselves to bring animosities, white against black and black against white, to an end because there was violence going both ways. They handpicked certain people to come and speak at this, and one was Nathan Bedford Forrest. And he agreed to come. And what I'd like to do is I'd like to read to you an excerpt or two from his speech. But before I do that, I would like to read to you an excerpt from Mr. G.W. Lewis, who was the much-respected black leader at the time. This is going to be a direct quote. White friends of the city of Memphis and Shelby County, it affords us great pleasure on this auspicious day to greet you, one and all, with heartfelt respect and affectionate welcome. We sincerely thank you, honored sires, for your presence at this momentous and memorable occasion. Let us assure you, gentlemen, and I speak for my people, that being the black people of the state of Tennessee at the time, that we feel cause for renewed encouragement and entertain a proudly recall this auspicious period as the moment in which fraternal discord has taken its leave forever from the manly and intelligent hearts of the United American Brotherhood, in which through God's providence our colored race may be permitted to enjoy a becoming and permanent part. In our heart of hearts, gentlemen, we again reiterate our grateful thanks for the kind considerations you manifest in your presence with our people today, which we will endeavor to appreciate in the future. This is directed toward not only Nathan Bedford Forrest, but other prominent Confederates that were invited to attend and speak to them as well. General Gideon Pellet, Colonel M.C. Galloway, Captain J. Hardy Mathis, and Major Minor Merriweather. It's not the animosity that we heard before. What this was is coming together of peoples of different races to try to do what we really need to do today. Let me tell you what Forrest's response was. Forrest said, I came here with Jew and some white people who think I'm doing wrong. I believe I can exert some influence, do much to assist the people in strengthening fraternal relations, and do all in my power to elevate every man and to depress none. And this was joined with roars of applause from the black congregation there. I want to elevate you to positions in law offices, in stores, on farms, and wherever you're capable of going. I've not said anything about politics today, and I don't propose to say anything about politics. You have the right to elect whom you please. Vote for the man you think best, and I think when that is done, you and I are free men.
These are the words of Nathan Bedford Forrest. I'd like to continue just a little here. Who would you consider right and honest and elected men for office? I did not come here to make you a long speech. And then he admits here that he's not much of a speaker. But he says here, I came to meet you as friends and to welcome you to the White people. I want you to come nearer to us. When I can serve you, I will do so. He goes on to say, many things have been said about me which are wrong, in which white and black persons here who stood by me through the war to contradict. His direct word to them is, go to work, be industrious, live honestly, and act truly. And when you are oppressed, I'll come to your relief.
Mr. Hudson, can you wrap it up in the next 30 seconds, please?
Yes, ma'am, I surely can.
Thank you very much.
88 years later, Dr. Martin Luther King's I Have a Dream speech, he says, which is something I'm going to say to my people who stand on the warm threshold that leads into the paths of justice. In the process of gaining our rightful place, we must not be guilty of wrongful deeds. Let us not satisfy our thirst for freedom by drinking from the cup of bitterness and hatred. We must forever conduct ourselves, our struggle in a high plane of dignity and discipline. We must not allow our creative protest to degenerate into physical violence again and again. We must rise to the majestic heights of meeting physical force with soul force. I find very little disagreement between Nathan Bedford Forrest and Martin Luther King. And these are the things, and this is the history, that we should endeavor together to put forward to the future generations to avoid the precipice of the violence and the Black Lives Matter mobs and a repetition of history that seems to be right at our front.
Thank you, Mr. Hudson.
I challenge Memphis to work with us, with the Sons of Confederate Veterans, to put all of this history in proper perspective to avoid serious mistakes in the future. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Hudson.
Thank you. And our last commenter on my list is Tom Meadows.
Yes, my name is Tom Meadows. I'm from Spring Hill, Tennessee. I'm also a commissioner with the Historic Commission for the City of Spring Hill, Tennessee. I want to thank you all for the hard work you've been doing. I want to let you know that this Heritage Protection Act, as it was originally done, and with the intent it was originally done, is a wonderful, wonderful thing. Being and living here in Tennessee is a great source of pride for me, but not just our history gives us pride. When I visit with officials from other states, do talks, lectures, demonstrations, one thing I can stand up and say is I am proud that Tennessee is doing all it can to protect all of its history, not just parts of it that promote certain political agendas, but all of its history, and trusting that we here in Tennessee also are fully capable of reading history and knowing what it means for ourselves without being dictated to by somebody else on what that history actually means. Please, anything you do in the future with this, make sure it reinforces your existing law and strengthens it so all can say, not only am I proud of Tennessee's history, but I am proud of how the people fight to preserve it for future generations. Thank you.
Thank you, Brooke. Thank you, Mr. Modis. Do we have any other comments? No? All right. Well, let me remind you that additional comments must be received by 4:30 today, June 13th, 2017. You can hand in your comments in the back of the registration table in the comments box here in Nashville. And your comments should be sent to Patrick at the email address on this PowerPoint, or also on the agenda that's printed out. We do thank you for your public participation. It is critical for what TDEC does, and we deeply appreciate it and value it. Also want to say thank you for taking time out of your busy day to come and voice your and have your voice be heard. So thank you, and we are adjourned.